Well, God has blessed us so wonderfully today to be able to live and enjoy so many good things, and now to be together this evening on His day to worship Him and honor Him. Thankful to be here. We're glad that you're here, especially if you're visiting with us, and can enjoy this time where we glorify our God together. We just sang a song, the chorus of which pleads with God to take our hand all the way. Now, the great unknown. There are a lot of people in various religions in this world that can't relate to such a plea, that don't understand it. But tonight I want to talk with you about the God who holds your hand. And He's not the God of a lot of the religions in the world today. If you are a Buddhist today, and billions of people are, they have no hope of knowing a personal God. There is no personal God in Buddhism. They have no hope of Him taking their hand, helping them in life in a direct way, or taking a personal interest in their well-being, because there is no personal God in Buddhism. If you're a Hindu today, and millions of people are, the gods that you worship are gods that are unrelated to human beings. They are gods with many arms. Maybe they're in the likeness of animals, all sorts of various idols. But they don't understand or relate to humanity. Humanity strives to relate to them. If you're a Muslim today, you believe in a God whose name is Allah. Muslims will tell you, if you get in a conversation with them, that Allah is just another name for the God of the Bible. It's really the same God that we're worshiping. I want to tell you tonight that that is a lie. Allah is not the God of the Bible. And don't let a Muslim ever tell you that He is. The God of Quran, the holy book of Islam, is not a God who is personal. He is a God who does not understand grace. He expresses love, but He is not love, according to the Quran. Let me read you something from a particular Muslim. His name is Abayaki. He wrote a book entitled Allah's Names and Attributes. And in it, in describing Allah, he says this: there is never any likeness between Allah and His creation whatsoever. Man was not created in the image of Allah, and Allah could never become man. That's why, by the way, if you do talk with Muslims, they object strenuously to the concept that Christ is God, that He came, the Son of God came, and is Emmanuel, God with us. They can't believe that at all, because of their concept of who Allah is. Now, considering the billions and billions of people today who have no God who can take a personal interest, that is, they own no God who takes a personal interest in them and in their lives, and who takes their hand and leads them to good times and bad, what a blessing it is that we can sing and mean the kind of song that we just sang, "Take My Hand." That sentiment is in many songs in our book. We sang one, we're going to sing another one at the end of the lesson tonight. But I want you to think about that. When you think about God, you're thinking about, from a biblical perspective, a God who created you in His image. And because of that, He can relate to you and you to Him on a spiritual level. Man alone, of all God's creation, has that ability. When the psalmist asks in Psalm 8, "What is man that you visit him?" The answer really is that man is the creature that God made for the purpose of having a relationship, a personal relationship with Him. And God's purpose for us is that we know Him on a one-to-one level as beings as persons, if you will, that we acknowledge Him as our Father and enter into a loving relationship with Him that's filled with grace, that's filled with personal contact. We have that because we're Christians and believe in the God of the Bible. In Isaiah chapter 41 and verse 13, God promises this to His people Israel. He says, "For I, the Lord your God, will hold your right hand, saying to you, fear not, I will help you." And we realize that there's a somewhat metaphoric language being used there. There's a bit of anthropomorphism where God is being given human attributes. We understand He doesn't have a body of flesh and bones like we do. He's a spirit. We understand all of that. And yet tonight, for just a little while, I want us to meditate on and appreciate together this wonderful attribute of God, that He has a hand, if you will, that will hold our hand, that He will be with us and wants to be with us in a personal way and helps us in a number of aspects of our lives in just exactly that way. The God who holds your hand is a God who is there when you're in need of guidance. In Mark the 8th chapter, there's this great story about Jesus healing a blind man. Jesus, who is God in the flesh, comes to earth and He encounters this blind man. In Mark chapter 8 and verse 23, He took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the town. And when He'd spit on his eyes and put his hands on him, He asked him if he saw anything. And he looked up and said, "I see men like trees walking." And he put his hands on his eyes again and made him look up, and he was restored and saw everything clearly, or everyone clearly. And he sent him away to his house, saying, "Neither go into the town nor tell anyone in the town." Here in this wonderful miracle that Jesus performs, He who is God in the flesh, there are three occasions on which He touches the man. And the first of them, He takes him by the hand and He leads him out of town. No doubt this blind man had been used to, as blind people are, folks leading him around. He needed, no doubt, to be led to be able to go anywhere. And you think, well, why didn't Jesus just heal him? Couldn't Jesus, as Naaman said about Elisha, couldn't He just wave His hand, you know, over his eyes and that be done with it? And couldn't He have done something simple? Sure He could. You ever thought about that? Why does He take the man and lead it? And then why does He go through this process of touching the eyes and all of this business? Surely that was necessary for God in the flesh. That wasn't necessary for Him to heal this man. Yet, that's what He goes through. Why does He do that? I think a number of things come to mind. It's plain to me, at least, that Jesus is trying to evoke faith in the man. The man needs to trust Jesus. See, you know, Jesus' miracles weren't just about showing His power. They were about showing that people needed to trust Him, showing that He was, in fact, God in the flesh, and that people needed to believe in Him as such. And so this business of leading him by the hand, Jesus leading the blind man out of the town, I'm sure in part will help that blind man trust Jesus. A blind person has to trust the one that leads him, doesn't it? But in all of this, and I think the point that I want to get at is, here is God in the flesh, and He has this personal contact with man. But He does that all through His life, doesn't He? That's the whole reason He came, or part at least of the reason that He came to this earth, to experience what it is to be human, to live that perfect life. We mentioned on one of the slides this morning, in the welcome slides, He's our high priest. He understands our weaknesses. He was in all points tempted like we are. He's in touch, if you will, with humanity. Spiritually speaking, all of us are like that blind man in Mark chapter 8, aren't we? And spiritually speaking, the Lord takes us by the hand and leads us where we need to go. He guides us to where we need to be. Jeremiah 10 and verse 23, Jeremiah said, the way of man is not in himself. It is not in man that walks to direct his own steps. We don't know how to go. We are all, in that sense, we are all spiritually blind and we need guidance. And the promise that you have from God is that he's going to take you by the hand and lead you in life. Now, this isn't some sort of mystical or supernatural direct thing, but it's something that God does for us through his word. Consider what the psalmist says in Psalm 73 and verse 22. In Psalm 73 and verse 22, he says, I was so foolish and ignorant. I was like a beast before you. Nevertheless, I am continually with you. You hold me by my right hand. You will guide me with your counsel and afterward receive me into glory. He talks about, the psalmist does, God taking him by the hand and guiding him by his counsel. And the counsel of God in the Old Testament is synonymous with the Word of God. That's how God guides us. That's how he, if you will, takes us by the hand and leads us in life when we don't know how to go and we don't know where to go and we don't know what to do. In Jeremiah 23 and verse 18, Jeremiah says, for who has stood in the counsel of the Lord and has perceived and heard his word? You see there the words counsel and word of God being used interchangeably. Again, they're synonymous in the Old Testament. We need guidance. We'll be lost without it. We don't know how to go. Can we just admit that? And God says, give me your hand. And through his word, he takes us and he shows us how to go. What a blessing it is to have such a God. And how often we neglect to appreciate his guidance and to follow it. And to understand this powerful tool that we have in our hands to guide us in our lives, the hand of God. The story that's told about an old sailor who is continually getting lost at sea. And so finally his friends bought him a compass. And with his brand new compass, he launched out and straightway got lost at sea again. His friends actually had to go out and rescue him. They were somewhat put out by all of this, having given him a compass to find his way home, and here he is lost again. And they say, what's the problem here? We gave you a compass. Why didn't you use that? Why didn't you use it to find your way back home? And he says, well, I couldn't trust it. I wanted to go north, and as hard as I tried to make the needle aim in that direction, it kept pointing me to the southeast. You know how that is? You know, you use a compass and the needle, and actually, if I had one right here, it would be pointing in that direction, wouldn't it? That's north. Of course, you can turn around like this. The needle's still going to be pointing that way, but it looks like, oh, now it's, and get it all the way around here. Now it's southeast. Man didn't know how to use his compass, did he? And you keep turning it in the direction that you want to go, and you're lost because you're not really following it. You're not really using it appropriately. This book will guide us. It has a true north. We have to learn to use it. We have to follow the direction. Otherwise, we're lost at sea. But God says in this book, in essence, he says through this book, take my hand. I'll guide you. I'll show you the way to my eternal home. What a wonderful God. And how we ought to take advantage of that every day in our lives, do we? Are we using God's word as guidance all of the time? Are we trying to figure it out for ourselves? God wants to take our hands when we're going through tribulation and persecution. Satan wants you to think, when you're going through tribulation and persecution, that you're all alone, that there's no one there to help you, and that God's not concerned with you. Elijah's conversation with God in 1 Kings chapter 19 is instructive here. You remember, he is threatened by Jezebel and runs off into the wilderness and has this conversation with God, and he says, I alone am left. Only me. Nobody's supporting me. Nobody's helping me. Nobody's standing for what's right. Of course, he was wrong all about that, about all of that. For one thing, God was with him. God was with him right there. We can find strength and courage because the Lord is with us no matter what we're facing, no matter what trials and persecutions and difficulties and hardships that we have to face because we're Christians. The Lord is there with us. In 2 Timothy chapter 4, verses 16 and 17, the Apostle Paul learned this experientially in his life. He knew so many faithful Christians, and some of them supported him all throughout. Some abandoned him at times. When he stood before Caesar at his first defense, he says in 2 Timothy 4:16, at my first defense, no one stood with me, but all forsook me. Can you even imagine Paul truly feeling everybody had abandoned him at his first trial? But he says, may it not be charged against them, but the Lord stood with me and strengthened me so that the message might be fully preached through me and that all the Gentiles might hear, and I was delivered out of the mouth of the lion. The Lord was with him, even when all others forsook him. So I'm here to tell you tonight that it doesn't matter what trials and persecutions and difficulties that you're facing for being a Christian. And there are a lot of them that we can face in the world today. And I think as things progress and our society becomes more and more secular, that we're going to find more and more times that we're going to be persecuted and suffer hardships. And some of them may be real physical persecutions before too very long. But we need to be assured of this, that God is with us and He'll hold us by the hand all the way through. I remember as child, you know, going to the doctor's office. And, well, he's got strep throat. Most of you here know my father was in the Army. So growing up, all we did was see Army doctors, and they're not known for their bedside manner. Let me just say that. If I was sick, I'd be taken to an Army doctor, and this, you know, Army doctor would come in, and you know, well, he's got strep throat today, and oh, just give him a big old shot, and they pull out a needle, you know, with a penicillin in it that big and turn you over and stick that in your hind parts and put that in there. And I can remember literally not being able to sit down for 2 or 3 days after getting one of those shots when I was a boy. But so many times I lived in horror, terror of, you know, going to the doctor. And any little thing that they did to me at that stage in my life, if my mama was there to hold my hand, I might be able to. And that's the thing. God is saying to us, whatever pain you're going through, however difficult it is, however afraid you are, I'll hold your hand. It will hurt, but I'll hold your hand. And when He's holding your hand, you know you can endure it. You know you can go through it. In Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 5, here's what the writer says. Let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have. For He Himself has said, I will never leave you or forsake you. So we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do to me? The Lord spoke to Israel in Isaiah chapter 43 and verse 2. And He says, when you pass through the waters, I will be with you. When you go through the rivers, they shall not overflow you. When you walk through the fire, you shall not be burned, nor shall the flame scorch you. God promises to be with us through whatever trials and difficulties, persecutions and tribulations that come our way. And God promises to be with us through temptation. Can I just observe this with you tonight? And I want you to think about your life personally just for a minute. What are the hardest temptations that you face? If you might just think in your mind right now, consider the temptations that you face and that are some maybe that you've succumbed to. I'm guessing, if you're like me, that most of those occur when you're alone. The explanation that a person gave into temptation in a moment of weakness. Have you ever heard that? Somebody say, oh, I gave into that in a moment of weakness. Often that translates into, in a moment when I was alone. The Lord can help us. He suffered being tempted, so He is able to aid those who are tempted, Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 18 says. C.S. Lewis made this insightful observation about temptation. He said this, he said, "No man knows how bad he is until he has tried very hard to be good. A silly idea is current that good people do not know what temptation means. That is an obvious lie. Only those who try to resist temptation know how strong it is. Christ, because he was the only man who never yielded to temptation, is also the only man who knows to the full what temptation means." And here then we're learning a couple of lessons. One of them is that yes, it's the good person, it's the person who beats temptation, who really understands the strength that it takes to do that. The person who says, "Well, I've been, you know, I'm in all of these sins and you just don't know how hard temptation is." He doesn't know how hard temptation is. He's never overcome it. He doesn't know what it takes to overcome it. It's the person who beats it that knows what it takes to overcome it. He knows how hard temptation is. The person that gives into it doesn't know. Christ, therefore, knows more than anybody about how strong temptation is. He's the only one that ever overcame all of them. He beat every one of them. That's what made him strong. He knows temptation. Now, to connect all of this up, when you're alone, know this, He's there. You can beat it if He's with you, because He can beat it. God takes us by the hand. He takes us by the hand so that we might avoid temptation. He teaches us to pray, "Don't lead us into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one," Matthew 6 and verse 13. Psalm 121 and verse 7, "The Lord shall preserve you from all evil. He shall preserve your soul." He gives us a way to escape temptation. "No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man," 1 Corinthians 10, 13 says. "And God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you're able, but will with the temptation provide the way of escape that you may be able to bear it or endure it." God provides that way of escape. He provides that for us. And know that when you're going through that trial or temptation, that He is there holding your hand, that He's trying to lead you out of it, trying to show you a way of escape, and He's certainly providing that way of escape for you. God knows how to deliver the godly out of temptation, 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 9 says. And He knows how to recover us when we've fallen into temptation, when we've given into temptation. He alone is the one who can pick us up and stand us back upright. Wonderful Psalm 37. That's on our minds tonight already. "The steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord," it says in verse 23, "and he delights in his way. Though he fall, he shall not be utterly cast down, for the Lord upholds him with his hand." Isn't that a beautiful picture? Here's a righteous man trying to live a righteous life. You and I tonight, many of us fall exactly into that category, don't we? Yet, occasionally we're going to fall into temptation. We're going to wind up on the ground. And it's there that God, by His grace and His mercy and through His love, walks up to us and gives us His hand and lifts us up and upholds us with His hand and puts us back on our feet and causes us to stand. What a wonderful picture. That's the God that we serve. You think about it. If you have no such God tonight, you fall spiritually and you're just down. And if you want to get up, if you're a Buddhist, if you're a Hindu, if you're a Muslim, you've got to get up on your own. God, the God of the Bible, picks you up for this moment. Lastly, the God who holds your will hold your hand in sickness and in death. In the times of our lives when we are most vulnerable, physically and usually emotionally as well, when we aren't feeling well, maybe we're facing a dread disease, it's then that God is with us. I don't have a lot of faith in the medical profession, but I do have some. I don't have a lot of trust that doctors are really in it for your best interests, but I think some are. I'll just tell you about an experience I had that is singular. All the times I've been in the hospital several times, I've had numerous illnesses over my lifetime. 2 years ago, this last December, as most all of you know, and I was going through right in the middle of my chemo treatments, at my very lowest point, I'd had chemo treatments earlier in the week. We'd gone in on a Friday because I was feeling so bad to try to get some sort of help for the pain and the nausea and to get something that would strengthen me up a little bit. I was dehydrated. And I went into the doctor's office, and Dr. Schreeder, many of you know him and some of you have gone to him as well. And he is the head of the Clearview Cancer Institute. So he's the big cheese over there. Okay. He's the main guy, but he's my doctor. And I was basically just stretched out on an exam table, moaning at that point, was about all I could do. And he walks in, takes a look at me, says, you're not feeling very well, are you? I said, no, sir. He asked me what was wrong, and I told him in about two sentences that I could sort of mumble out. And the man said, we're going to get you some help. And he doesn't call a nurse in there. Takes me by the hand, and he picks me up, and he puts his arm under my arm, and he walks me out and leads me down the long hall, down another long hall, to the treatment room. And you can only imagine with him being the head of the place and walking into this treatment area with all of, you know, the nurses are kind of starting to scurry already as he tells them to. I've never had an experience like that before. And I tell you that to say just this. You won't find very many doctors who are going to take you by the hand and lead you where you need to be to get the treatment that you need. But you have a God who's there all the time. Every minute. And He knows what you need. And He's providing what you need. You know, you go to the doctor and he tells you, well, it could be one of several things. What he means is, I don't have the foggiest idea what this is. He says, well, have you had this before? What he means is, I don't know what it is, but you got it again. He tells you, well, we need to run that test again. What he means is, your lab work is lost. Those are the kind of things you normally get from the doctor, aren't they? He says the insurance is going to cover most of this. And by the way, Dr. Schreeder told me that as well. And he was correct. They did. But usually when they tell you the insurance is going to cover most of this, what they mean is you're going to have to sell your house and your cars and mortgage, whatever, in order to pay for all of this. You know, they tell you, well, these pills are going to have a few side effects maybe, and wind up growing hair on the palms of your hands. There's not a lot of real care there sometimes, but with God there is. And that's what I want to say. And that's what I want you to see. Listen to Psalm 41 in verse 3. The Lord will strengthen him on his bed of illness. You will sustain him on his sick bed. The Psalms say that healing is from God. All healing comes from God. It's not necessarily miraculous, but all healing comes from God. and your entire experience in your sickness and whatever it is that you're facing and whether you're healed or not, God is with you all the way. God is the one who will strengthen you on that bed of illness, and He is the one who will sustain you in that time on your sickbed. And if it is the case that you don't recover and that you pass from this life, it is God who will be there with you in that final moment when nobody else can be. The psalmist promises this in Psalm 48 and verse 14. This is God, our God, forever and ever. And He will be our God, even to death. God holds my hand. I read a story not long ago. A man had been sick for some time. He was someone who had faith in God. He prayed often. In his prayer life, he found that it was difficult to stay focused while he prayed. Maybe some of you find that as well, that you pray, but your mind wanders off of prayer after a while and start thinking about other things. But he found that he would do that. And so to help him maintain his focus, he set an empty chair by his bedside and pretended that somebody, God, was sitting in the chair. And so he would, as he prayed, talk to the chair, so to speak, as if God's presence were actually there, and that helped him to stay focused. As I said, he was very sick, and he passed away one day. And his daughter came in and found him, rolled over to the side of his bed with his hand on the chair. And to me, that just symbolizes the God who holds your hand, even to death. Tonight, I'm so thankful, and aren't you, that we have a personal God who cares about us and loves us immensely, who wants to be directly in contact with you in your life. I'm not talking about things that are magical or mystical. I'm talking about things that are real. I'm not talking about feelings that are better felt than told. I'm talking about an experience that comes from knowing the God of heaven in His way through His book. Tonight, if He's not your God, if He's not your God, you don't have a God who's worth anything. Won't you claim Him tonight? Isn't this the God you want? Name His name. Confess His Son. Be baptized in water for the remission of your sins. God will hold your hand. We'd ask you to come home, stand and sing.